Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, March 15, 2018. South Sudan's ambassador to the United Nations pleads with the UN Security Council not to punish his country.
It would be in ironic double jeopardy to punish a country that is already suffering from an acute crisis. Mr. President, my country's position is that punitive action and punishment are counterproductive.
And the governor of Amadi State threatens to kick out cattle keepers from his state.
We also say that they should not be contaminating water, they should not be burning of forests and all this. We have all put them in the ground rules. And so we have delegated our responsible roles to the Joint Border Committee.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The mandate of the United Nations mission in South Sudan has been renewed for another year. The UN Security Council voted to extend the mandate this afternoon without any objection. But SINBO reports the South Sudan ambassador at the United Nations took issue with the language in the document authorizing the renewal.
Draft Resolution 2406 was adopted unanimously by the 15-member Security Council, renewing the UNMISS mandate for another year. Joan Nyanyuki, a regional director for Amnesty International, says today's renewal should prompt UN officials to expand protections of the most vulnerable in camps across the country.
Within these protection sites, two things need to happen. There needs to be a real security within these protection sites. So the no access from the outside, we get reports of breaches of the security and entry of gangs and armed groups into the protection sites. So that needs to stop. So there's real strengthening of the physical barriers that ensure that this protection. So that's from external aggression. And then within the sites, we need to be sure that there isn't any abuses actually going on by the UN forces themselves.
Today's resolution reiterated what it termed as an increasingly great alarm regarding the political, economic, and humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, as well as the violence caused by military leaders since the eruption of violence in the country. But South Sudan's deputy permanent representative to the UN, Joseph Moum, who was the only speaker at today's meeting, says the real problem in South Sudan is what he calls the mischaracterization of the conflict in his country.
It would be in ironic double jeopardy to punish a country that is already suffering from an acute crisis. Mr. President, my country's position is that punitive action and punishment are counterproductive. The only solution to the conflict in South Sudan is through a political process of which President Salva Kiir Mayardit has continuously played an active role and made numerous compromises.
But the language in today's adopted resolution asserts that the conflict has spread because the ceasefire agreement signed by both warring parties was never implemented by the government, along with the government's failure to keep its promise of allowing unhindered access for humanitarian assistance. Nyanyuki agrees.
The war in South Sudan really is it's about the politics of power sharing between government and opposition. And, I mean, a failure of them to agree on how to have an inclusive government that takes into consideration the history of South Sudan as a young nation. And it has gone on to the point where now it's no longer government and opposition, but we get reports that there's other armed groups also enjoining and taking advantage of the conflict and the widespread insecurity.
And while UNMISS focuses on protection of civilians, officials should also focus on collecting and preserving evidence of violations, according to Nyanyuki.
They have a key role in investigating and documenting the violations, securing evidence and preserving it, so that when systems of accountability do kick into play, you know, the justice systems, be they the hybrid, be they national or international systems, that there will be evidence and that will be useful in ensuring justice and also in seeking reparations for the victims.
Today's renewal extends UNMISS's mandate until March 2019. Amnesty International is also calling on UNMISS to improve its ability to protect South Sudanese civilians from sexual violence, both within and outside of civilian protection sites. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
The governor of Amadi State says cattle keepers from Terekeka have defied his orders to vacate farmlands in Amadi State. Authorities from the two states say they will try peaceful means to resolve the standoff. Gift Friday has the story for VOA from Koboko in northern Uganda.
Despite my governmental order, none of them have come back. We will use other means now.
That is Amadi State Governor Joseph Ngere Pasiko. Ngere says he and his Terekeka state counterpart, Agustino Lakobuli, have agreed to form committees made up of chiefs from the Mundari and Muru to convince and speak to the cattle herders to return home. He says cattle from Terekeka are still grazing in Bangolo, Wito, Karika, and Kotobi of Amadi State, months after he ordered the pastoralists to leave the area.
We are contributing for police forces to them. We are contributing some resources to them. Our partners said, like the UNMISS, Vistas, and FAO are also contributing logistics, communication sets. So we are very serious, and we see that this thing will succeed.
Ngere claims cattle keepers from the former Lake State have heeded his orders and have returned home. The governor says once cattle herders from Terekeka State go home, there will be peace along the border and farmers can cultivate their land without any conflict.
We also say that they should not be contaminating water, they should not be burning of forests and all this. We have all put them in the ground rules. And so we have delegated our responsible roles to the Joint Border Committee and court.
Terekeka State Information Minister Philip Ladu said a week ago that his government will convince all the cattle keepers to leave Amadi State before the end of the month.
I'm assuring that these cattle are going to move back within the middle of the month. All cattle belonging to Terekeka State will be in the state as being directed by the state governor.
Ladu says cattle keepers from Jubek State are returning to their cattle camps. He admits that cattle keepers from Terekeka have been a source of conflict in the neighboring states.
Already there are some organized forces organized with the county commissioner and the chiefs who will be moving jointly with the authorities of Amadi State to direct us to where these cattle keepers are.
Late last year, President Salva Kiir issued a presidential decree ordering the army and the national security to ensure the immediate withdrawal of pastoralists and their cattle from Equatorial region back to their homes. It was the second time the president issued such orders in an attempt to prevent conflict between farmers and cattle keepers in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Koboko, northern Uganda.
The head of the Investment Commission in Jonglei State is threatening to cancel certificates of incorporation of fake investment companies registered in Jonglei State. John Achek says state authorities are cracking down on individuals who are pretending to be investors. Manyang David Mayar has this report for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei State Investment Commission says there are more than 500 investment companies in Jonglei owned by people who were given land but never started a business.
If you view your investment land, they can help us job opportunity to the youth. One, the government get monthly tax, government get yearly tax. This is can help the government. But now you are security and you run away from the country, you are secured and you are now safe at home. Now, we don't even like that one.
Last week, Achek summoned the owners of investment companies registered in Jonglei to his office for a review of their paperwork. A visibly furious Achek threatened to withdraw the licenses of the investors who defied his orders.
I'm going to give him another order because we follow the law. And if they are not come to my office, I will write a memo to the Council of Ministers to approve that one. They are not longer investors in the state because we don't want to deal with somebody who will not follow the law.
Achek says under the law, an investor must have a certificate of incorporation, tax clearance certificate, import and export license, state operation license, investment certificate, and an insurance certificate. He says any investor experiencing financial difficulties should declare in writing that they are bankrupt rather than sitting back and doing nothing. Moses Thorne is a local investor involved in the hotel industry. He blames the state government for not following proper procedures suitable for investment.
Since the government is locate the land to the investment, it don't remove the people from the position of the investment. So investment people, they are not start development. Everybody have the papers, but if you came to need the land, so the land you find there is somebody inside there.
Thorn was allocated land by the government and he built semi-concrete hotel rooms, a restaurant and a bar on the property. He says every year he pays up to 80,000 South Sudanese pounds in taxes. He says the ongoing conflict and South Sudan's hyperinflation have scared off potential investors in the state.
Cement now is 7,000 and iron sheet now is 3,000. And one timber now is 2,000. And 1 kilo of meal now is 700. So that is the challenges now. There's no any development. So anybody who blame the investment, I think is not. Unless somebody outside, but somebody inside here, you cannot blame the investment. Because the challenge is, it's facing everybody, even the government.
Since South Sudan separated from Sudan in 2011, nationals of Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, Sudan, Eritrea rushed to invest in various businesses. These foreign nationals are also required by the South Sudan Investment Act to partner with a local investor as a condition for doing business in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the government of South Sudan is digitizing historical documents. We'll have more on that when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how many languages do you speak?
Swahili is a major. Then I speak in my mother tongue. Then I speak Arabic. Then I speak official language, which actually is English. Yeah, that is the full language which I really speak and write and communicate.
I speak my local language, which is Zande language, some simple Arabic, English, and some little Luganda.
I can speak almost 5 languages. My language, Kuku, Swahili, Madi, Arabic, but it's somehow, but can tell me. Even English, it's not fluent, but can tell me a bit.
One is English, second is Arabic, and then local language from Luo language, and then Dinka language.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Ministry of Culture, Youth and Sports and the Kenyan-based Rift Valley Institute has received support from donors to resume preserving the country's historical documents into a digital format. An official with the Ministry of Culture says a huge task lies ahead of his office to digitize important documents. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
We always use 24 bytes, and then we use 600.
That is Aluel Isaiah, Inspector for Digitization at the National Archives, explaining to officials how paper documents are being converted into digital format. Boxes containing hard copies of documents are stacked on top of each other. Many pages inside the boxes are torn, faded, and wrinkled. Officials worry that if they are not digitized, the documents could be lost altogether. Isaiah says the files temporarily being stored in a house in Juba's Munuki suburb were collected from all over South Sudan after being exposed to rain, extreme humidity, termites, fire, and destruction during the civil war with Sudan.
We received some documents from those of
archive records management, sometimes you can get the files are very fragile. So to handle it in digitization is a bit risky.
The government suspended the exercise last year due to a lack of funds, but the effort was relaunched after the government received financial support from the Swiss and Norwegian governments. Some documents contain historic information dating back to 1900 during the colonial rule by the British. Sadiq Morris James, a graduate from Catholic University of South Sudan, is working as an intern at the National Archives and is being trained on how to digitize the documents.
There are a lot of informations depending from file to file. File 66 talks about the tribal issues within the country. You can find issues with Nuer, Dinka. You can find issues between the Zande and Moru. You can find issues with Maidi, Acholi. You know, some of these issues, contentions within the tribal, you know, sphere, you will find some of these informations in those files. And you can go to other files like boundaries. That is file number 8.
Edward Ernest Jubara, Director General for Archives and Antiquities at the National Ministry of Culture, Youth and Sports, says his staff work under very challenging conditions.
But still they're continuing to do that. What we would like to have, which we have discussed with RVI, that to see that the staff have to be motivated so that they continue. To continue, because the current conflict has really affected the performance of most departments in the government. You will find only very few committed people who would continue.
Once the digitization process is finished, researchers, scholars, and students will be able to access information on South Sudan's history online. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Uganda, where the issue of domestic violence has come to the forefront in Uganda after a member of parliament argued in favor of wife beating. For VOA, Halima Athumani has the story from Kampala.
In the words of the Ugandan legislator, a man who disciplines his wife can touch, tackle, and beat her to streamline her. Onesmus Twinamatsko, a member of National Parliament, made the comments to a national TV outlet on March 8th. Outraged, the public demanded an apology. This is what they got on the floor of Parliament Wednesday.
Kindly accept my sincere and unreserved apologies, Honourable Member. And the general public, and more particularly the women, this apology is unconditional. The beating I met wasn't the normal beating, but another type.
In other media interviews this week, Twinamatsiko reportedly said certain forms of abuse, like slapping, are okay. Female legislator Adeke Anne Ebaju is among the MPs demanding disciplinary action against their colleague.
There was no remorse in his statement. He still made mention of a certain beating in quotes, which he did not even explain. And whatever explanation he attaches to it, I think it still belittles women. Did you see how all the male colleagues were thumping when he spoke about a certain beating?
VOA was not able to obtain recent government statistics on spousal abuse. However, a 2011 demographic and health survey is telling. It found that about 3 in 5 women in Uganda believe that wife beating is justified. This is despite laws such as the Constitution and the Domestic Violence Act, which outlaw such abuse. On International Women's Day, March 8th, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni had highlighted the issue and passed a stern warning.
Men who are cowards are the ones who beat women. Why do you beat women? Why don't you, if you want to fight, why don't you look for fellow men and you fight? Why do you beat somebody who is weak?
The reasons women cited for beatings, according to the 2011 survey, included going out without permission, neglecting the children, arguing back, refusing to have sex, or banning the food. VOA spoke to Tina Musuya, the executive director of Center for Domestic Violence Prevention in Kampala.
All those who still think that a man must be the head of the household think they are privileged to discipline them. So many of them think that when someone does that, it is an expression of love. And when the victims come out to seek for support. They are blamed and told to, you know, there's no good man out there, just hang in there, pray about it, he will one day change.
Local activists viewed Winamasiko's comments as a setback. They said the narrative needs to change on domestic violence in Uganda, with perpetrators being held accountable, not excused. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
A week before U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was fired, 10 U.S. senators sent him a letter expressing concern over reported intimidation and detention of the main opposition candidates for Egypt's coming presidential election. The senators made several requests, including a frank assessment of the credibility of Egypt's electoral process and whether all citizens will be able to participate freely. Experts say it is unclear how Tillerson's sudden departure may affect the senators' request, as we hear from reporter Muhammad Al-Ashenawi in Washington.
The letter is signed by 10 of the most influential members of the United States Senate from both parties, including John McCain, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, and Tim Kaine of the Foreign Relations Committee. While the senators acknowledge that Egypt remains a critical U.S. strategic partner, they argued that without progress on the political front, the country's security and economic gains will be unsustainable. The senators asked for a State Department assessment of the human rights situation in Egypt, including the rights to freedom of association, peaceful assembly, and freedom of expression. Egyptian Minister of Parliamentary Affairs Omar Marwan said Wednesday that Egypt has taken numerous steps to move forward, only to be hit with more false allegations on human rights. The fate of the senators' requests is unclear due to the State Department's unsettled situation, with President Donald Trump nominating CIA Director Mike Pompeo to replace Tillerson. Andrew Miller is a former director of Egyptian affairs at the United States National Security Council. He says Pompeo may find ways to make the relationship work.
We can't rule out the possibility, but those underlying differences where the United States and Egypt are not on the same side are going to continue to assert themselves. So he may want to take the relationship in a different direction, but he's not going to find necessarily a ready-made audience for that. And it's possible that the professionals, if he listens to them at the State Department, could play a role in restraining those temptations.
Miller says whether Pompeo responds to the letter or not, the 10 senators will likely continue to pressure the issues of the election in the largest Arab country and improving the human rights environment. Critics say Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has increasingly undermined rights heading into the election.
So even though the letter is addressed to Secretary Tillerson, I think that the new Secretary of State will also take heed of that letter, and there will be an effort by those same senators to engage with the administration, to engage with the State Department, with the new Secretary of State, to ensure that the issues and questions posed in that letter are factored into U.S. policy vis-a-vis Egypt.
Michelle Dunn, Director of Middle East Program at Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, agrees that the letter is still valid and may get the requested assessments. She also says the U.S. cannot affect major change in Egyptian politics. However, she says certain U.S. policy decisions could indicate dissatisfaction with the reported human rights violations in Egypt.
We saw last year for the first time that the administration actually has withheld some of the military assistance from Egypt. On that basis, the United States should be very careful that its assistance is not directly used in human rights abuses, which there is evidence that it has been used.
Several experts on the region say that regardless of who runs the State Department, Congress can try to link foreign aid to preserving basic freedoms. For VOA News, Mohammed El-Shenawi, Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The UN Security Council has renewed the UNMISS mandate for another year. The vote was unanimous today. Joan Nianyuki, a regional director for Amnesty International, says the move should prompt UN officials to expand projections and protections of the most vulnerable people in camps across South Sudan. She said within the sites, there is no access from the outside, and there have been reports of breaches of security in armed groups in the past that reside inside the sites. The Security Council's resolution noted with increasingly great alarm the political, economic, and humanitarian crisis in South Sudan and violence caused by SPLA military leaders. But South Sudan's ambassador to the UN, the only speaker today, said the real problem is what he termed the mischaracterization of the conflict in his country. He said it would be ironic to punish a country already suffering from an acute crisis. The council said the conflict has spread because the ceasefire agreement signed by both warring parties was never implemented. The Amadi state governor says cattle keepers from neighboring Tarakeka state have defied his orders to vacate farmers' land in Amadi. Governor Joseph Nungeri says Tarakeka's governor, Juma Ali Malu, have both agreed to form committees made up of chiefs from the Mundari and Maru areas to convince the cattle herders to return home. He says cattle from Tarakeka are still grazing in several parts of the state months after he ordered the pastoralists to vacate the area. Nungeri says cattle keepers from former Lake State have heeded his order and have returned home. And finally, John Acek, the head of the Investment Commission in Jonglei State, is threatening to cancel certification of incorporation of investment companies in Jonglei State. John Acek says state authorities are cracking down on individuals who are pretending to be investors in that state. The Investment Commission chairman says more than 500 investment companies are officially registered in Jonglei, owned by people who were given free land by the government but never started a business there. Last week, Acek summoned the owners of investment companies registered in Jonglei to his office for a review of their paperwork. A visibly furious Acek threatened to withdraw the licenses of the investors who defied his orders. One investor who built a hotel and restaurant on the land that was given to him by the government says his colleagues often don't build because of the country's insecurity and hyperinflation. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Sudanese Girls by Jose Chameleon.
Keys Records. Oy, oy, oy. Freedom Boys.
Don't die. Jose Chameleon, Freedom Boys. Don't die. Jose Chameleon, Freedom Boys.
Lamba dam bam bam. Freedom Boys, Chameleon combination. Lamba dam bam bam. Southern Sudan, Uganda, rock the nation. Shagala Uganda girl.
Sudanese girl, in Tumsai, Jemili, Wahilu.
Nampena wangu, atandiki kota mali, ananipiki ya banana.
Adiltani, hilu futu, lagagi, anadi ide.
Njagala Uganda girl, nemba mkude yala yala ila talindika o.
Sudanese girl, in Tumsai, Jemili, Wahilu.
Nampena wangu, atandiki kota mali, ananipiki ya banana.
We have been listening to Jose Chameleon and the Freedom Boys with their song Sudanese Girl. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.